Attacks on Saudi Arabia's oil refineries send prices soaring.
American consumers will feel the effects of this.
And UAW workers at General Motors go on strike, their largest in a decade.
For the union, they're feeling like it's now or never to lock in gains of any kind.
Plus, Purdue Pharma officially files for bankruptcy. This is What's News from The Wall Street Journal. I'm Kim Gittleson. Let's get started. Now, before we take a closer look at what happened in Saudi Arabia over the weekend and the impact that it's had on oil prices, here's what you missed. Purdue Pharma, which is the maker of OxyContin, has officially filed for bankruptcy protection. This temporarily halts the lawsuits from nearly every state, 2,600 cities, counties, hospitals, Native American tribes, and others who are seeking compensation for the costs of dealing with the opioid crisis. Purdue and the family that owns it, the Sacklers, have broadly denied that they're responsible for the crisis. Steve Miller, he joined Purdue's board last year, said, "My objective here is to put this company on a course to be a major positive contributor to our society." We report the filing is likely to set up further fighting with the states and cities that haven't signed on to a deal the company values at around $10 billion. And factory workers at General Motors' plants are officially on strike. It's the United Auto Workers' largest work stoppage in more than a decade. From Detroit, Nora Naughton explains why they decided to call the action.
The UAW, first and foremost, is calling a strike because they say GM isn't meeting their most basic demands, which include wages, health care, and job security. But the standoff really stems from a confluence of events. First is GM's move last fall to close four U.S. factories. Second is a federal corruption probe into the union's top ranks that is putting pressure on leaders to display strength and dedication to their members. And finally, a slowing U.S. car market will make it harder for workers to win richer contracts in the years ahead. And that last point is important. It's likely the next U.S. auto industry downturn will come during the next four-year contract cycle. So for the union, they're feeling like it's now or never to lock in gains of any kind.
GM said in a statement that it was disappointed that the UAW decided to strike and that it was negotiating in good faith. So what impact will it have on the company? Here's Nora again.
For any automaker, a shuttered assembly plant alone costs about $1.3 million per hour. And that's not even including the impact of parts or component plants. So that's a pretty steep cost, but it can be recovered if the strike is shorter because automakers can use things like overtime and extra shifts to make up for lost production. So what this means for GM really depends on how long the UAW extends this strike. GM's manufacturing is nimble enough to recover pretty quickly from anything that lasts less than about a week. But when we get beyond that point, labor experts are saying that GM will really start to feel the pain.
President Trump weighed in on the matter, writing on Twitter, quote, "Here we go again with General Motors and the United Auto Workers. Get together and make a deal." One reason he's paying attention? Manufacturing workers in the Midwest are an important voting group, and the president has promised to bring back jobs to the region. And thousands of protesters once more took to the streets in Hong Kong yesterday in defiance of a police ban. From Hong Kong, Steve Russolillo has more.
We just had the 15th straight weekend of protests in Hong Kong. Tens of thousands of pro-democracy demonstrators took to the streets. And really, what's changed now is that this has really become a deep political crisis. You see a lot of anti-China sentiment that's just going on throughout the streets. There are people that have changed the Chinese flag to look like a swastika. They've been marching on it. They've been chanting slogans. It's really heated and really emotional against China. And it all comes 2 weeks before China celebrates the 70th anniversary of the People's Republic. And this is supposed to be a big, grand celebration for them. And instead, what's happening in Hong Kong is creating a pretty black eye for China. And there really doesn't seem to be an end in sight to all of this.
That's Steve Russolillo in Hong Kong. Now, our main story this morning. It has to do with the attacks this weekend at oil refineries in Saudi Arabia. The attacks shut down more than half of Saudi's oil production. That's nearly 6% of the world's oil supply. Now, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo blamed Iran for the attacks, but Iran said it wasn't behind them. To find out the latest, I rang up Dion Nissenbaum, who's in Beirut. So, Dion, walk me through what we know right now. What happened and who's behind it?
Yeah, early Saturday morning, two major Saudi oil facilities were hit by a string of explosions that set fire into the sky. And within a few hours, Houthi rebels in Yemen, about 900 to 1,000 miles to the south, who are at war with Saudi Arabia, claimed responsibility. They said that they launched 10 drones that flew hundreds of miles north to hit these facilities closer to the Persian Gulf, even north of the capital Riyadh. But pretty quickly, U.S. officials that I spoke with said that the Houthi fighters in Yemen were not responsible for this, and they started pointing the fingers to the north and suggesting that Iran itself may have directly carried out the strike, or that Iran allies in Iraq may have launched these strikes. And what's been interesting as the investigation has unfolded is as there's increasing evidence not only that at least some of the strikes came from the north, either from Iraq or from Iran, but that cruise missiles were used in this attack. That would signal a pretty significant escalation in the conflict if Iran indeed fired cruise missiles directly at Saudi Arabia's oil facilities. That's a concerning escalation.
And President Trump weighed in, right?
President Trump sent out a tweet over the weekend saying the U.S. is locked and loaded and ready to respond once they determine who is responsible. And U.S. officials privately are already saying they think that the attacks came from Iran. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo has directly accused Iran of responsibility here.
What does Iran have to say about all of this?
Iran itself has rejected these accusations from the U.S., saying it played no role in these attacks and saying this is just American propaganda. One of the interesting things about the timing of the attack is that there have been efforts to try and organize a meeting between President Trump and Iranian President Rouhani at the United Nations General Assembly that's coming up. President Trump had signaled he might be willing to talk with President Rouhani, but these attacks pretty much torpedo any prospect of that happening.
Now, we've already seen oil prices spike in response to the attacks. We're going to talk about that later in today's show. But I want to focus on what this means for Saudi's huge oil company, Aramco. They were planning on going public, right?
Yeah, this is a big week for Aramco. Aramco, as you said, is trying to go forward with an IPO. They have to move quickly to try and get these facilities back online. They're hoping to get a third of the production back online by the end of Monday. We're just going to have to see if they're able to do that. Another question for Saudi Arabia is whether the air defenses has worked. They have American-provided air defenses that should help in preventing cruise missiles from striking these facilities, and it's not clear that they helped at all.
So what happens next? When will oil production be back online?
We're going to have to see what the U.S. and Saudi Arabia say about these attacks going forward. They have yet to provide any evidence to support the accusations that Iran was behind it. U.S. officials have been telling me that they feel like they can provide that evidence. There are efforts to declassify some of this information, and we're just going to have to see what the next steps may be.
We'll have the latest on the situation in Saudi up on WSJ.com. On to markets. As promised, we'll focus now on the surge in oil prices after those attacks in Saudi Arabia. As of this recording, the price for U.S. oil futures was up by about 8%. The price for Brent crude futures is up about 9%. John Simons is our Europe and Middle East energy editor in London. So, John, why are investors so worried? Isn't the U.S. producing a lot of shale oil?
Investors are worried because the attacks disrupt a significant amount of oil production for the world. It's true that the U.S. does produce a lot of oil these days and is challenging Saudi Arabia for dominance as the world's number one exporter. But the U.S. consumes a lot of the oil it produces. And so Saudi Arabia is the top exporter in the world. So that's a really big deal.
What will be the impact on us from all of this? Didn't President Trump say he could open up the Strategic Petroleum Reserve?
The impact on consumers is going to be pretty big in places like China, Japan, India, Korea, and Taiwan, which are places that consume a lot of, that import a lot of Saudi oil. The state of California in the U.S. Imports a lot of oil from Saudi Arabia. In fact, about 21% of oil from that comes into California comes from Saudi Arabia. So American consumers will feel the effects of this.
And here's what else we're paying attention to today. Boeing's board is considering changes to its engineering department. According to a person familiar with the matter, the reorganization would involve changing the org chart for top engineers assigned to airplane development programs. The aim is to de-emphasize program-level schedules and budgets. The reason you should care? Well, it's among the first tangible internal changes following the two deadly crashes of Boeing's 737 MAX. And Democratic presidential candidates are calling for Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh to be impeached. Their calls come after a New York Times report yesterday on Justice Kavanaugh and Deborah Ramirez, who accused him of exposing himself to her at a party in college. In reaction to the report, Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren said he should be impeached, and Bernie Sanders said he supported any, quote, appropriate constitutional mechanism to hold him accountable. President Trump said the New York Times report, which the journal hasn't independently confirmed, was made up. Justice Kavanaugh has previously denied the accusations. Finally, Rick Ocasek, the lead singer of The Cars, has died at the age of 75. He co-founded the band in Boston in the mid-1970s with Benjamin Orr. The band's hits included Good Times Roll, My Best Friend's Girl, and You're Just What I Needed. That's what's news from The Wall Street Journal. Thanks for listening.